Good morning, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Marianne.
How are you today?
I am great, thank you very much.
What makes your heart pound?
So I really like using permaculture principles.
Can you tell me what that means?
And the word doesn't kind of tell you exactly what it is, and it is difficult to understand sometimes. It's really a contraction of permanent agriculture, and that term was used in 1911 by Franklin Hiram King, and he was describing Asian ways of farming at that time and noticed that they were different, and he just called it permanent agriculture. Mm. And then after the war, the Green Revolution started, and that was really basically industrial farming, so large-scale farms. Instead of having the small farms that we were used to, we went into really now massive farms, and most of those farms are producing one crop intensively. They're using fertilizers, they're using pesticides, and they're using big machinery to harvest it. And that sounds bad the way I'm saying it, but actually, you know, it was good because the people needed food and that method was producing food quite successfully. But as time went on, people started to look at that and see, are there any problems with it? And so there definitely are. One problem is it's a monoculture. So it's one type of crop being produced in large quantities. And that means that that crop is depleting the soil. It's not putting anything back. It's really taking out from the soil. The soil needs to be fertilized quite intensively for the crop to grow. It's open to pests because you've only got one crop there. And so if a pest comes along, it's very likely to spread from one plant to the next plant to the next plant and destroy the whole crop. So then you have to use a lot of pesticides to try and stop that happening. So it just becomes a little bit more and more complex and needing more and more input in order to keep harvesting the crop. And obviously that's a little simplistic, I'm sure, and farmers have other ways of managing that, but that's the simplistic idea that led people to re-look at permanent agriculture, which then got named permaculture by Bill Mollison and David Hongram, who were two people working at the University of Tasmania. And they had been looking at indigenous practices in Tasmania, and this idea of permaculture came up from that and also having been inspired by previous thoughts on the same thing. And they defined it a little bit more clearly as being to use a variety of plants that would work as a polyculture instead of the monoculture. Those plants would then support each other. They would have benefits towards the other plants. So each would grow in a different way, but it would also give some benefits to other plants in the same growing area. The idea then was that the soil would need less fertilizer, if any, because the crops that you're growing are going to work harmoniously to fertilize and keep the soil in good condition. And you're going to need less water management. You're going to need less pest management, because if a pest comes along, they may well destroy one or two of those plants or even all of one type of plant. But that pest is not going to destroy the whole area, because pests are usually very specific to one plant. Wow. So you're going to have maybe some loss. Everyone's going to have some loss at some times. But hopefully you're going to minimize your losses and you're not going to have your whole crop destroyed in one season.
Wow.
So this is a nice way to think about things. I know there's some controversy about it. I think farmers who are producing large quantities might find that very difficult to use on a big scale. The nice thing is, for most of us, we're not farming on a big scale. We're really producing in our backyards, in our community gardens. And I think in those settings, for sure, permaculture is very suited to those environments. And so I kind of like to tell you a bit more about kind of the principles of permaculture and some ideas of it. So probably the kind of the simplest concept that we have of it is the one that most of us in North America already know really well from the indigenous inhabitants of this land. And they have the three sisters, which is where they grow corn, beans, and squash together. The corn grows very tall and very straight. And so they put that in the center of the plot that they're going to grow around. And that acts as a support for the next plant along, which is the bean. So beans grow up the corn and use the corn for support. But at the same time, the beans are putting nitrogen, which is fertilizer, into the soil and supporting the growth of the corn. And then the outer circle of that crop is going to be squash. The squash is a vine that grows along the ground, and it's going to protect the soil from moisture loss. So it's going to keep lots of moisture in the soil, which is good. It's going to get some nitrogen from the beans as well. And in fact, when the crops are all picked, the indigenous people would traditionally make a soup from the beans, corn, and squash. And that soup would actually be a complete meal with all of the nutrients they would need in order to have a healthy diet.
Oh, that's amazing.
It is amazing, and it's perfect. And we can follow some of those same ideas in our own environments and hopefully make a better way, a more sustainable way of growing healthy crops for ourselves to eat.
How would we do permaculture in our backyard?
So the first thing to look at when you're setting up a new plot of ground and you want to use permaculture principles, first just take care by looking at what's already there. What have you got? So for an example, I'm going to use the community garden area that we grow in, which is basically an open field. So there's grass. That's what's there. It's an open field. So there's winds coming in. There's a lot of sunlight, which is good. And there's soil, but it's not really, really fantastic soil. So we know that if we want to grow things, we have to use what's there and we want to improve what's there as well. So one thing we did recently to start a new kind of growing area is we planted trees along the perimeter facing where the winds are coming from to protect some of the other crops from wind damage, which we often get quite big winds. We started with the soil and improve the soil by adding compost. And then we're going to plant shrubs, flowers as another layer, fruit crops, and maybe some vegetable plants. And then we're going to put some vines as a layer to cover the ground. So we're going to try and keep the soil covered so that it doesn't lose moisture and is protected. We're going to put in nitrogen-fixing plants, which are like beans, and put nitrogen into the soil. And then as the plants grow and they drop branches, they drop leaves, maybe they die back in the winter, we're going to leave the plants on there so long as they're not diseased. And that's going to put more organic matter back into the soil and keep the soil growing and becoming healthier as time goes along. And hopefully it's all going to work well together.
Can so, I try to recap all that information?
Oh my yes, God. It was a lot. Sorry.
It was a lot.
Yeah.
So you're telling me that the Green Revolution was great, but it had a lot of input of pesticides and nutrients, which allowed for big crop production, but it was a monocropping of extensive land, and therefore there was a chance for more disease and pests. Permaculture both predates the Green Revolution and is now being reintroduced, and that it was something that Indigenous and Native peoples all over the world used, where they were allowing different plants to be together.
Yeah, in a sort of cooperative way. So the plants are chosen because they work well together. They're going to allow the plants to thrive together.
So that's biodiversity in the crop field?
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually. And biodiversity of not just the plants, but of the insects that are going to come to the plants and pollinate them and maintain a healthy ecosystem, really. We're looking at trying to have a healthy ecosystem.
So if you have all this biodiversity of the plants, what does that do with the insects?
Yeah, you get more insect biodiversity. And you encourage the insects to come to pollinate your vegetables so you get a good crop. You're not worrying about having to use, for instance, introduced bees to be brought in to pollinate everything, because you're already encouraging all of those insects that do the pollination to be there already by having so many different plants there.
And what happens to the bad insects that we don't like?
The bad insects that we don't like will still come. In fact, the insects aren't bad. It's just some of their habits are things that we don't like. So they're not bad, but we don't like them. But usually there's enough competition, because if you have a variety of insects, same with a variety of plants, they're going to compete with each other. They're going to push each other out. Some of the insects will eat the insects we don't like. Some birds will come in and eat the insects we don't like. And so we will still have those insects we don't like, but hopefully we won't have them dominating and eating all of our crop in one go. We'll be able to manage it better. And there should be a balance between losses and what we get as a harvest.
So does permaculture mean we have to do less work?
In general, yes, it does, because we're not intensively using fertilizers and pollinating, and because sometimes we have to pollinate by hand if we don't have insects around. So we're reducing some of that hard work until we get to harvesting. Then, unfortunately, there's no way to get around it. We have to harvest. But that's the fun bit, because then we get to eat it as well.
This is so interesting. And so you talked about layering. You talked about the new garden that you made had trees on the windward side and then other plants coming down to the ground.
Yes, exactly. Just so that there are different heights of plants. So some offer shade, some are going to offer wind protection. And then you can grow plants into the areas of that garden where they're going to thrive the most. So hopefully you're going to choose plants that will work well together and are going to protect each other and give each other the best chance at success.
What do you do with the dead plants in the fall?
So if the plants have infections, it's probably a good idea to cut and remove plants with an active infection. But really, most of them are not going to have any problems. And we can just actually leave them standing. Their roots are going to stay in the ground and maintain contact with the fungus in the ground. Their stems are going to be a good habitat for insects to overwinter. Their seeds are going to give food to the birds over the winter. And then as they die back and then fall over, they're going to add organic matter into the ground. So we really don't need to do anything.
Except I hear some future podcasts about the birds and the bees in our gardens.
Yes, exactly. We're going to have lots of birds and bees in our gardens, hopefully.
Wow. So it sounds like permaculture is definitely a lot less work once you've got your head around the concepts.
I think so. And the concepts sound a bit challenging, but really they're as simple as corn, beans, and squash. So I think if we remember, this is what people were doing for a long time, and it sounds complicated and a bit challenging if you're looking at starting a whole new area, but you could do something very, very simple. And beans are a great one to include in any vegetable garden because they will help you with nitrogen fertilizer in your soil and feeding some of those other plants. So it's just really kind of looking at putting plants together that work well together.
This is so interesting. It does bring to mind how in Ottawa, we used to have streets lined with just one kind of tree.
That's a really good point, Marianne. Yes, we used to have elms everywhere all over Ottawa. So that's a monoculture because it was just one type of tree. And of course, we all know what happened when Dutch elm disease came. And it really moved from tree to tree to tree and wiped out all of the trees in some areas completely. Had we had a variety of trees planted, we still might have lost all of the elms or a lot of the elms, but we would have had some other trees there. And so we wouldn't have felt that loss quite as greatly. And of course, the trouble with trees is they take so long to get to a good height. If you lose all of your mature trees in one go, you're waiting a long time for those new trees to come up.
That explains why the city of Ottawa does tree diversity now on streets.
Yes, I think they are moving towards more diverse plantings and not just one type of tree, which is good.
Yeah. So now I've learned that it's permanent culture, agriculture.
Yep.
And that it'll be less work once I get it established.
Yep.
And that there'll be less disease and pest problems because there's more biodiversity in everything.
Yes. So there won't be zero pest problems. There will always be pest problems, but they should be minimized compared to if you only grow one crop.
That sounds fantastic. It sounds like a win-win situation.
I think it really is, Marianne. Excellent.
Thank you, Elizabeth. This has been very enlightening.
Thank you.